It's time for JT the Brick.
We're an NFL show. We've always been an NFL show. We are going to cover the NFL and the birth of a relocated franchise better than anybody. We're full-blown Raider Nation. We're going Raider Nation every day.
JT the Brick.
I got Mike Mayock and John Gruden ready to draft players on the defensive side of the ball. We got the 12th pick and the 19th pick in the NFL draft in the first round. We have a new stadium. We have a new facility out in Henderson. And we have all the Raider partners coming to Vegas to take this franchise to a much higher level globally because of Allegiant Stadium and what they're going to do on the field. I am in studio without a mask on, so we're ready to go.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
JT, welcome to the Las Vegas Sports Network on a Friday. What a week. Another big week for us here. Thanks to all of our partners, as we've been thanking them as much as we humanly can, because that's why we're here on the radio. We get a chance to do this 5 days a week from 4 to 6 o'clock with no Vegas Golden Knights. It's been interesting. We've had a couple of shows that normally would have went 2.5 hours instead of two for the extended pregame show, but there's no Knights hockey for obvious reasons. And we're here, and we've been here all week. And thanks to Bobby, we had a stellar week with some really good guests, and we're going to wrap up the week coming up with some good ones. Also, next hour, Darren Millard will join us, the host of the Golden Knights broadcast, and we'll continue with what we're doing with them. Is we're talking about our partners here every day, imagining, wondering where the Vegas Golden Knights would be if hockey was still going on, or even if we have hockey coming down the stretch and we can get the postseason going. They have one of the best rosters in all of the NHL, clearly with the time off, which has been very unfortunate for Stone and Pacioretty and Tuck. Like all teams, most teams around hockey, if they come back in a month, to be at full strength. And this is a Stanley Cup contender, and we're covering the team that way. So no doubt about it, it's been tough for all the Vegas Golden Knight fans on the flagship that have been listening. We greatly appreciate that. Today's a big day for me. Today's my wife's birthday. My wife has a big birthday today, a big one, and we're going to be celebrating it at home tonight with my two sons and my wife. And it's a shame because a lot of people are going through birthdays, and a lot of people are going through the birth of a child or a grandchild or a cousin, or something's happening now and you can't be with your family. And it's really difficult. So social distancing is something that I think we've been stressing a lot on this broadcast. We've been talking to a couple of people about it. I've been trying to talk to leaders in the community about it. But today, I'm really happy. I'm really happy that I have such a great wife who's a sports fan and gives me the encouragement every day to go live my life out on the radio. And she does all of it, all the work on the other side, helping raise my sons. She's a great mom, a great wife. And I wanted to open up the show by wishing my wife a happy birthday. And I will celebrate it with her not only tonight, but we'll have a big postponing celebration that I'll amp up. Isn't that the really big thing about what's happening now? If you had a birthday in March or April, you got one coming up in May, or there was something big on your calendar that you had to postpone. I'm thinking about making sure you put those events back on the calendar. Because when the calendar comes back for sports and concerts and live events and dinners and going out to movies and doing everything we normally do, we're going to have to make up for what we missed, right? We're going to have to go back and say, what did we miss? Whose birthday did we miss? What event did we miss? All these kids who are missing Little League, all these kids in high school, my son's in 11th grade, who's going to miss the prom and miss all these other events. Hopefully we can get back to some normalcy, and we're going to have a lot of makeup dates. Growing up in New York as a baseball player, as a kid, and there was always rainouts, and you always made up those games. You'd have a doubleheader, you made them up. Well, man, there's a lot of makeup dates coming for sports. Oh, there are a lot of makeup dates coming, and I can't wait to talk about those games that we're going to put back on track. And then hopefully the expanded new calendar of sports, which is going to look exceptional. The big story today is, you know, Rex Ryan is trending because he took a shot at Amari Cooper of the Dallas Cowboys, and he did it on ESPN. And there's a lot to this soundbite because when I saw it and I watched it and leading into the show, most sports shows have been talking about this today. I want you to hear it in its entirety before I give you my comments.
Well, I agree with Dan on the fact that I wouldn't have paid this guy. To me, this is the biggest disappearing act in the National Football League. He doesn't show up on the road. He doesn't show up against, when the competition's good, when he's against the top corners, that guy disappears. And to me, he reminds me, it's only one time that I can remember in recent memory on elite receivers and disappearing acts like Amari Cooper. That was the kid that the Raiders had a few years ago. Oh, that's right. That was Amari Cooper. This is who he is. And Dan, he doesn't love football. Hell with it. He stops his routes. He does all this. I wouldn't have paid this turd. No way in hell.
All right.
No way in hell would I have paid this guy. To me, you pay Dak Prescott. Forget all those numbers. That, you know, they're number one in the league because of Dak Prescott, not because of this guy. It's a deep draft at receiver. They made a huge mistake right here.
All right, that's courtesy of ESPN. So what's the problem with that? Everything he said was fair until he used the word turd. He used the word turd, and the internet's going to break. He's trending today over topics that have to do with the coronavirus. Go into trending on social media and put in Rex Ryan, and he is trending more than some topics right now. As we speak on trending, here's what's trending. Rex Ryan, hashtag Disney Plus, and more hits on Rex Ryan than the passing of the legendary Hall of Fame singer, Bill Withers. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. That guy, who's a legend. He's trending more than Hunter Biden, and he's trending more than the legends that have passed away this week due to the coronavirus. Do you believe this? So what do I have to say on this? He crossed the line by calling him a personal name, the turd. I posted a picture of me and Amari when he was with the Raiders. I interviewed him on the TV broadcast. Nicest kid you can meet. Is he aloof? Absolutely. Did he give out up on a couple of routes in his career? Yes, he has. Does he love football? I don't know. I don't live with the guy. I met him a few times. I saw him practice hard and play hard. He's had a brilliant career so far. The Raiders got a number one pick for him. I think the Raiders didn't want to pay him long term because they didn't love his passion for the game. But he's a great player. He's not a good player. He's a great player. He turned around the Cowboys. He's the reason Dak Prescott is going to make the money that he is. So for Rex Ryan, I'm not going to pound away because he said turd. With what I have to deal with on satellite radio and what people say on radio, I got to fill 4 to 6 hours a day. I don't think turd is worthy of getting suspended, but he did cross the line because he made it personal. And the apology, you know it's coming. You knew it would be coming. That's what we're dealing with today. So for Rex Ryan, I think the analysis was really spot on and good. But other than that, I think it was crossing the line with the personal shot at him. All right, let's welcome to the show one of my favorite sports talk radio hosts of all time, who has a new radio show coming up on Sirius XM. Let's welcome the great Tony Bruno to Lotus Broadcasting on the LV Sports Network. Tony, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. And let's get into your career, how you made the transition from being a local Philly host, getting ready to move to ESPN. Take us back, Bruno, back in the day.
You know, back in the early 90s, sports radio was just beaming. I mean, New York, obviously the Fan in New York was already on the air. And since WIP was also owned by Infinity Broadcasting, CBS Infinity, Mel Karmazin, who obviously ran New York and put Howard Stern on the air, and all the other great talents that we've heard. So WIP decided they wanted to switch to sports, and I believe they were the second sports station, yeah. They and EEI in Boston, that started the whole sports radio becoming commonplace in pretty much every major market, and certainly medium markets and small markets throughout America. So Angelo and Al and I got together. I was doing sports on another AM station as a sports guy. So I've done sports and news. And so when WIP hired me to be the third guy, Angelo and Al, Angelo is from Rhode Island, Al Morgani from Boston, and I was a Philly guy. So they brought me in as a radio and Philly guy. Those guys were great writers, you know, making the entree into the sports radio realm, where a lot of great writers have made the transition from writer to broadcaster to TV hosts. And so those guys were doing it, and they were amazingly talented guys. I was in there as the third guy. And so while we're doing the show every day in Philly on 610 WIP, Charlie Steiner, who I worked with in New York in the 80s at the old RKO radio network with Keith Olbermann and Don Kricke and those great talents when I was doing weekend updates, which was my first taste in network radio back in the 80s from 1980 through 86, we were going up to New York at the old 1440 Broadway studios every weekend to do sports updates. They were only 2-minute updates, but that was really my first entree into doing national stuff, but not long form. So anyway, Charlie and I worked there. Charlie's at ESPN doing Sports Center and boxing, and he calls me and says, hey, ESPN is going to start a radio network. They're asking the talent here, do we know anybody that they think would be good at doing this. So Charlie called me and says, hey, get your ass up here. You know, you'd be perfect for this. You know, Keith's going to do it. They hired Chuck Wilson from Providence, who's a great talent. And so I went up there and I talked to them. And even though I had young family back in the early 90s, my kids were all young, I mean, really young, I didn't want to leave my family and move. So I was able to go up there on Friday afternoons after we'd finished the WIP shift at 10 a.m. I jump in my car, drive up to Bristol, get there at like 3 in the afternoon, have a big meeting, go out to dinner with Keith and, you know, and guys like Beano Cook.
Yes.
I mean, we all the people who are up in Bristol, the Beano Cooks, the Tim Brandos, all the great people who work there, we all went out to dinner on a Friday night at a local Italian restaurant and shoot the breeze. And then we go on the air Saturdays and Sunday nights doing 7-hour shifts from 6 p.m. to 1 a.m. And remember, JT, back then, you know, we didn't have the internet as far as the ability to communicate. There was no social media. You know, we didn't really take any phone calls because they didn't want us to take phone calls. So we were that back then in the early 90s, 92. We were the first voices a lot of people heard growing up when they were driving around and they wanted to know the final score of a baseball game. Now you can get it anywhere. But back then, generations of kids who are now in their 30s and 40s who were listening back then said, I remember listening on the weekends. And, you know, we had some amazing talent. Nowadays, you know, radio stations and companies don't do that. They don't put their best talent on the weekends. And so ESPN didn't have any broadcasting, any other radio content. So that's why they assembled this group of people. Mike Tirico, as you go down the list of people who have worked there. And so we were fortunate to be there in the right place at the right time. And it was a great, great combination of great talent. You know, the access of all the ESPN talent, Chris Berman, you name it. They would come over into the radio studio after they would do their TV hits because they knew they can expound and not be limited to talking about 20-second clips about, you know, highlights and packages. So Dan Patrick would come over. Keith was already with us. Boomer would come over. Tommy Jackson, you name it. Everybody would come into the studio and do a segment with us. So it was really, really an amazing era in radio back in the 90s and something we probably won't see ever again.
Tony, I think one of your claims to fame is the Philly side, and I'm a New Yorker, but I've been out west for so long, is East Coast radio is different than West Coast radio, and you're an entertaining guy in a very combative market. Boston, New York, Philadelphia, a lot of fans are more angrier. They're more on edge. Their whole life is with their team and winning and losing, and you were able to take that Philly edge that you have, but remain fun and entertaining and not be a guy that was just always upset and always mad with a win or a loss. Is that a big part about the arc of your career? When you looked at sports, you didn't take it. You took it very seriously, and you still do, but you understood life outside of sports as a fan, as a tailgater, as a dad, as someone who was involved in a community.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's how I think you endear yourself to fans. I mean, there's a lot of people who have acts, so to speak, where, you know, when they're on the air, they're a completely different person than they are off the air. And I've always tried to be the same. I want to be that same guy that people hear that's laughing and having fun. You know, most of my friends and people I've worked with say, you know, the show never ends with me because I'm not just performing. I'm just being me. And when a lot of young people say, you know, how do I get to be like you? I said, just be yourself. You can't be me. I can't be you. So just do it. Have fun. People hear when people are having fun, JT. People hear when somebody on the radio or see when somebody on TV is genuinely loving what they do. And I was blessed at a young age to think that this is what I wanted to do, and I stuck with it and worked my way through it all the way up to the top levels of this business. And so if you just are true to yourself and you never change, you know, you obviously change with the times as far as, you know, embracing social media, embracing the digital world. We have to do that as guys who've been around a long time and understand that the younger generations, you know, don't know what we know and haven't lived what we lived, but that doesn't mean we hold that against them, and so they shouldn't hold that against us. So I just try to be the same guy I've always been. You know, people know I'm from Philly. I'm not a homer. I mean, obviously when the Eagles won, I was happy because growing up here, I'd never seen them win a Super Bowl. And so I live and die with the teams, but I'm not one of those guys who just yells at everybody because they're not a Philly fan or they root against the Philly teams. I mean, that's just natural for fans everywhere. You know, the rivalry with the Dallas fans and the rivalry with the L.A. fans, you know, the Laker fans and all the other fans that get riled up when their teams are either doing really, really well or really, really poorly. You know, those people are the ones who are the most vocal when it comes to listening and engaging with sports talk radio hosts.
So finally, will you have to get up 3 hours early now with your writers? Are they providing you writers to write your radio show so you can read it off a teleprompter? Okay, a lot of guys do that now. Are they going to give you extra staff here because of what you're doing with Twitch? And now are you going to be able to handle this new staff that you're going to have in the basement?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I still, you know, even though I've been doing the 2-hour Twitch show every day, I still prepare. It takes me longer to prepare because there's always preparation.
Yes.
You know, you're on the internet, you're seeing stories, you save them, you write them down. And the next morning, you know, as I'm getting up doing a 1-3 show Eastern time on the Twitch channel for the last over a year now, I prepared as if it was a regular radio show. I'd have 2 sheets of notes, you know, not actual script, but stories of things that I want to touch on. And then, of course, you know, being able to ad lib and bring my own spin on things, so to speak, or takes. That's just natural. So all you need is the basic information. Obviously, you know, when you're doing TV and you're reading off a prompter, that's different because you have so many more people involved in producing a television show than in a radio show. So you don't really need big staffs. I don't need joke writers. I have my own lame jokes. And when I do a bad lame joke, people rip me. And that's the best part of it. You know, people can criticize you and you don't get bent out of shape because somebody said, man, that really sucked. Because I know it sucked. And so when people know that you know it sucked and you don't take yourself that seriously, I think people tend to either like or dislike you. But I always wanted to be one of those guys. I didn't want to be one of those guys who's half the audience hates me and the other half likes me. I wanted to be the guy that everybody likes,
that's
no matter
great.
Your age, your race, your color, whatever. It's just about having fun and doing what we love to do, which is talk about sports.
That's a great way to wrap it up because it's interesting. So many people who don't know us on the radio, you could get divisive, you could have trolls, people don't know about you. But I love what you just said there because there are so many people skipping the line now, Tony, trying to get ahead of a career like you've had because they're trying to be divisive, knowing that it's going to take half the audience to despise them. But the clicks are going to go up. The Twitter followers are going to go up. But you have to live that life. If you want to be that person and you want to be so divisive, I don't know how you can turn it off when you go back into your home for your real life. And that's what's so good about you, man. You live the life that I know on and off the air. It's been incredible knowing you. This new launch is going to be unbelievable. I'm sure I'll see you down the road. Leave us with something you're consuming on television. I've been asking all of our guests, what's something that you've been binge watching, something new that's come into your life as you are sheltering in place?
Well, interestingly, you know, I don't binge. I mean, I had to get into Tiger King because
right.
Everybody was talking about it, and I have Netflix, and I really don't watch. I don't binge watch shows because I don't want to spend, you know, 7 hours up all night watching a show. So I started watching Tiger King with Miss Robin, and so I did 2 episodes on Saturday, Friday night, 2 on Saturday, and then I finished it up on Sunday. So 7 episodes. This way I'm up to date. When I see people tweeting about it all the time, I know what it's about. It's the craziest show ever. No one, not even Brian De Palma, not the Tarantino, couldn't write a script to that show. And I watch a lot of science stuff at night. You know, I love the reruns of some of the great classic sports that the TV networks have to do. But I like look around, and I'm into the science stuff. I've always been into that stuff and abandoned places and crazy stuff and paranormal stuff. So I just look for mind candy at night now that there's not much sports to talk about. And that's how I pass my time when I'm not eating my keto diet and losing 15 pounds during this pandemic.
Please share that with me. I'm gonna need someone to pull me out pretty quickly. Tony, thank you. Congratulations. Best to Miss Robin. I'll be listening. Really appreciate you doing this.
Thank you, JT. Good luck, man. Good to talk to you again.
So I appreciate Tony Bruno coming on. Catch his new show on SiriusXM. You can get that app for free. You can catch the show that I do every night on SiriusXM, Brick at Night, for 4 hours a night. Also, SiriusXM has a free app until May 15th. Download it. Coming up next, one of my favorite guests, the former baseball player Eric Burns, who ran a double marathon, over 52 miles on his treadmill this week. You want to be inspired? Stick around. Burnsy is coming up next. What an inspiring week with this guest. Eric Burns ran a double marathon on his treadmill. When I saw it on social media, I had to get him on the show. The MLB Network analyst, former big leaguer, Burnsy, thanks a lot for coming on and inspiring us. How are you?
Well, you know what's funny is that, you know, obviously I think all of our worlds have kind of come to a halt. And, you know, I think we're getting used to living our lives a different way. But also at the same time, I think there's been, you know, a lot of benefits out of this. And I think one of those is, you know, sort of seeing humanity come together in a lot of respects and literally practicing social distancing and staying apart and everyone staying in their homes and doing everything we can to fight this virus. And, you know, like so many other people, I had a race actually that I was supposed to do. It was an Ultraman triathlon. Sunday was supposed to be the third leg of it, and it obviously got canceled. And the third leg just so happened to be a 52.4-mile double marathon run. And so instead of just kind of, I don't know, saying, packing my bags and put my head down and going in my room and crying about it, I thought to myself, I said, you know what? Today might be a good day just to hop on the treadmill and knock out the 52.4 and kind of prove that, hey, look, you know, no matter what our circumstances are given to us, let's try to make the most of it. And yeah, it was obviously a long day on the treadmill, but I was able to get through it.
Walk me through the difference between the treadmill and running on the road and what goes through your mind. Your conditioning is unbelievable. It's never been better. The way you're running long distance is mind-blowing to me, but what were some of the challenges doing it indoors on the treadmill compared to being outside?
Well, I mean, as you could probably imagine, you mentally sort of mind-screw yourself, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny because I write this blog, it's called The Daily Hustle, and it's almost, I probably say the best way to describe it is, like, a lot of the way I write is sort of in diary form. And so reflecting upon, like, yesterday, right? So I was on the treadmill today, this morning, back again, and thinking about, like, okay, spending almost 9 hours on the treadmill yesterday, like, what was the most difficult part? And really, it's the boredom, right? And it's something, it's funny, because it's something that we all fight in our lives, and we all feel like, we have to have something. We have to be doing something. And there were several times yesterday where it was like, okay, yes, of course, I'm bored, I'm tired, this hurts. But at the same time, you're like, man, number one, the pain lets me know I'm still alive, and I'm very grateful for that. And number two, it's like when we can become comfortable with the uncomfortable, when we can become comfortable with the boredom, it's a really interesting place, and there's not many of us that have the capabilities to do it, me being one of them, and I think that was probably the hardest part yesterday, but it was also the biggest lesson that I learned is that, look, man, we live these super crazy active lives, and again, this kind of goes back to the whole social distancing and lockdown thing, which, like, we have this time on our hands. Sometimes in life, it's okay if we're not go, 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 rah, 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 accomplishing this, this, and that. We're kind of fighting through that. But the main difference, JT, between running outside and running, you know, obviously on a treadmill, it's the mental stimulation that you get from being outside. And not to mention the vitamin D and the sun and everything else, which helps charge you forward.
Eric Burns is our guest, MLB Network. Former big leaguer. So I want to stay with this because of the pain and the fact that you're associating the pain of running and doing this conditioning at such an intense pace, more than you ever did as an athlete, as a big leaguer. And we've talked about that in the past and all the way back to your high school career, UCLA. There's something now that's triggering you to know that you're not going to go on a 5K run. You're not running 10 miles. 12 miles isn't enough. When you get to 20, 30, and 40, the way your body is handling the pain adjustment is incredible to me.
But the problem, here's the problem, JT. Like, people don't understand what the human body is capable of.
Right.
And there's this ultra world that there's a lot more people than me that are in it, that have continued to push limits and continue to, you know, I'd say challenge the, you know, the body and the mind of what's actually possible. Now, you know, what I tell people all the time, though, like, look, dude, this isn't about running 20, 30, 40, 50 miles. This isn't about doing a half marathon. And I love it. I love how we as a society, we put these limits, right? So it's the 5K, it's the 10K, it's the half marathon, it's the marathon. And then it's the 50K, it's the 50 mile, it's the 100 mile, like, whatever. But basically, we all stop, most people will stop at about a marathon. And the funny thing was that when I got into all this, dude, I never ran more than 4 miles in my life. I never swam. I never ridden a bike other than a beach cruiser. And then, you know, kind of one thing led to another. And I found myself in this ultra world. But it's not about, I actually, this was another Daily Hustle last week. This isn't about, you know, me and what distances that I'm going to do. This is about you and what you're going to do. This is about the person that, you know what, they've run 5 miles in their entire life. That's their furthest run. There's a buddy of mine, right? I took him out the other day, and our whole goal was to get him past that point. Dude ended up running 16 miles with me.
Wow.
So because we mentally block ourselves with societal preconceived notions, we put limits. And when we surpass those limits, all of a sudden you're like, wow, like I had no idea this was even possible. So, you know, it's not, I'll tell you what, it's you know, more than anything, I think it's all very humbling. But I think it's also kind of, it's very motivating in the sense that we all have our own limits, find what those limits are, and then figure out a way to surpass them.
Eric Burns joins us. Yeah, this is fascinating to me because of the social distancing and what's happening with the virus and the fact that people are home and people are very concerned about going outside and getting their conditioning. And now we're living in a world, Eric, where people are saying, well, I can go outside. And then I'm freaking out because I live across the street from a park in Las Vegas, a really big park, like a central park for our community. And everybody believes, oh, it's the weekend now. I can leave my home and take my dog and all my kids and go there. And there are yoga moms out there with seven of them, and they're not distancing. And everyone's having a really difficult time going through their diet, their conditioning, what they're allowed to do, what they can't do. Your social media jumped out at me because I saw you on the treadmill, then I saw your kid, and then I saw the amount of miles that you did. What message do you have for people who now need to get out of their house if they can, or if they can't get out of their house and they don't have a treadmill like you do, how can they keep their mind fresh along with their body?
Well, I think the biggest thing is we have to have a routine. Right. And so I'm dealing with, I have an 8, 9, 10-year-old and they're at home and, you know, they're doing their school online, but it's only 3 days a week. So we have all this extra time for them. So basically I sort of expand on the Daily Hustle, right? And I put the Daily Hustle and I put a list of stuff for them to do. And it's like 1 mile, 50 dopamine jumps, 50 push-ups, 50 sit-ups, walk the dogs, 1 hour of free play outside. I have, you know, all of these foot reflexology boards, which is a whole other thing. But I have this list, and they literally have to go through it and check it off before they even think about turning on a screen for the day. So I really believe that there's something that Ryan Holiday, mm-hmm. who is a fantastic author, written Obstacles Away, Daily Stoic, amongst a lot of other books. Stillness is the Key is his most recent one. But, you know, him and I've communicated with him back and forth. But he has this thing that he learned from Robert Greene, who is a, you know, fantastic author himself and sort of this legendary dude. And he said, you have a live time and you have dead time. And so every single day you can get up and you have a choice. Are you going to use this as a live time or dead time? And what he means by that is basically, you know, here we are in this situation where it's like, oh, this would be total dead time. No, it's all what we make of it. Every single morning we get up, we have a choice. It's like, how are we going to attack the day? How are we going to, you know, basically motivate ourselves? It's like we kind of rely on so much outside influence, you know, be it our jobs or whatever else it is in our life to push us and go, 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 where it's like, no, you know what? We have the ability to structure this ourselves. And look, you don't have to be a runner. You don't have to be, you know, this crazy sort of triathlete or anything else. especially when it comes to, the physical exercise. I put my kids through an entire physical exercise, basically routine here at the house without anything. Like, it's just them and their bodies and going through these things. So it really doesn't take much.
Right. Eric Burns, as we wrap it up, this is important because I have an 18-year-old home from college, freshman in Oklahoma, now not going to experience the second half of his freshman year, big kid, former football player, and I got a junior in high school. You can imagine what he thinks of his devices and his streaming and all that. He's now homeschool, and they were really good, and they still are athletes as kids. And what message can you say to parents who are sitting there struggling with their kids because they want to give them space? Bernsey, this is a time now where we don't have a playbook on how to deal with our wives or partners or kids. There's more anxiety. People are in. They're going to be in for a while as this is extended at least another month. And people are trying to communicate better. Families are trying to talk together. They're trying to go through this without a playbook. Generations haven't been through this. It's not easy. And it seems like you got a really good plan.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is that, my mom's, 70-some-odd years old, and here she is, and we had her on FaceTime last night at the dinner table. And so I think, the number one thing is we have to remember that human beings need social interaction. So here she is by herself. She's in Half Moon Bay currently. We're up in Lake Tahoe. And it's funny because I probably talked to my mom, JT, like once a week before this, right? And maybe a FaceTime, maybe not. Every single day, we got her on FaceTime. I got her with the kids, this and that. So we have to be very conscious of, because of this distancing, to remember that human beings are pack animals and we work very well together. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, it kind of goes back to my wife and I started a foundation called Let Them Play. And it's really the whole concept and idea was the fact that 97% of public education schools have gotten rid of everyday PE. 60% of kids do zero after-school youth activity. Kids are spending 7 to 9 hours a day on screens. I got to imagine that's only gone up here recently. So the problem is, and the funny thing is, this isn't a fat-shaming thing. This has to do with what physical activity does to the mind. And so when I tell my kids, you have an hour of free play outside, I open up the back screen door and I throw them in the backyard and then I lock it. Like, the reason why I'm doing this is because it basically allows them to do what they do, to use the creativity and the imagination of whatever they're going to do and play to entertain themselves. Plus, they're outside getting stimulation that way. And on top of that, just moving, 20 minutes of moderate activity, and what that does to the physical brain, what that does to stimulate, to basically stimulate the mind to get it to work better. And I had a lot of experience in this because I was diagnosed with ADHD at 9 years old back in the mid-1980s when no one knew what it was. So they prescribed me coffee, which I wasn't going to drink at the time. And then the other thing that they said to do was, hey, your mind's going to work better if you're physically active. And then once my teachers understood that, and once I started going out and being able to focus after the physical activity, like my test scores, everything, just me as an overall student, went way through the roof. So when we take that away from our children in this day and age, there's, JT, we're limiting their potential. We're not giving them an opportunity to succeed in life. So we've handed out almost $200,000 in grants to youth activity organizations over the past couple of years, and this is something we're really, obviously really proud of, and something we're going to continue to try to champion.
Bernsey, what you're doing is incredible. You're an inspiration. Before we, again, wrap it up and talk about the blog and what you're doing, I know your limitations and what you can talk about. You're one of the premier baseball analysts out there. What would you like to leave us when it comes to Major League Baseball? Knowing the calendar, knowing where we are, jonesing that we've missed opening day, not looking at the schedule because the virus is in charge of the schedule, not us predicting it. But what are you optimistic about when baseball comes back and we could all talk about?
Well, I think that we're going to enjoy a shortened season.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the details of how or the whole thing is going to go down. I think this is something that is sort of like, you know, you don't really know how much you love her until she was gone, right? And so we're sitting here at this point going, man, I want anything, any baseball, any sports really at this point would be fantastic. But I think that so long as we're able to get in 60 games, like if they came back and it was August, September playoffs, let's go. And then the other thing, and I'm not privy to the inside talks happening, you know, in the commissioner's office or with the Players Association or anything, but I know they've talked about playing around with the playoff format, mm-hmm. right? And so I really believe that change in the game of baseball is going to be incredibly important here within the next decade, because if we're not making adjustments to improve, to enhance the game, to be able to attract younger viewers, to continue to get the kids out and get them playing and loving this great sport, we have to keep up with the times. And in a lot of ways, I think this might be a blessing in disguise for the game, in that we'll be willing to make these adjustments going forward.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Tell us about the blog again, how everybody can find you. I'll tweet out everything on social media. Where's the blog?
Thanks. It's called The Daily Hustle, and it's to ericburns.com. We got these cool new sport reflexology boards that I sit here and try to champion even more. But honestly, dude, I ordered 1,000 of them. We're almost sold out. We're down to like our last 50. I thought it'd take about a year to sell. It's taken 2 weeks. But they're really, if you can get one. They're really cool. And basically, what you stand on this thing for 5 minutes a day, and it stimulates all different parts of the body, be it the pelvis, the sciatic nerve, the pancreas, eyes, ears, sinuses, brain, neck, lungs. Like, it's crazy. It's obviously 2,000 plus years old, the concept of behind foot reflexology. But yeah, that's on there. I got a book on there called The Effortless Life Lessons from the Human Trash Chest Dummy. So it's kind of a one-stop shop. But yeah, the blog, I think, is the coolest thing that we do, because it's daily. I have a podcast that goes with it. It's just sort of simple messages that you know, keeps myself on track, and I think helps keep other people on track as well.
It's outstanding. I already have you penciled in. We're going to do this again April 30th. I want to check in with you every month, and hopefully we're on the verge of much better news. Really appreciate this. You inspire everyone. Thanks for giving me some time.
You're a man, JT. Thanks, dude.
Appreciate Eric Burns sharing that inspirational. Look, we're all trying to work out. We're all trying to get some walks in or stay healthy. What this guy did this week is incredible. All in one run. The long-distance marathon runner does it on his treadmill. We appreciate Burnsy. Coming up next, my conversation with Tom Flores, the legend who should be in the Hall of Fame, the iconic former Raider, two-time Super Bowl champion head coach, four-time Super Bowl champ, Tom Flores, next on the Las Vegas Sports Network. Welcome back to the show on a Friday. JT with you. Some of the conversations that we've had this week, because we don't know when you're listening. We know you're going digitally listening. We know you're in the car less. You're getting in the car on a Friday, hopefully, maybe to run some errands. We wanted you to hear Tom Flores and the importance that he means to the Raider Nation, one of the greatest coaches of all time, as he's sheltering in place. Thanks for joining us, Coach.
Everybody's safe. Everybody's staying home and or working from home, my kids. My grandkids are not going to school right now. And they're all staying home and driving their parents crazy. And we are in the desert, Barb and I, and we're driving each other crazy by isolation.
Absolutely. For Coach, I wanted to talk to you because you're one of the great leaders of my lifetime. Do you find yourself in a leadership role, not only with your family, but your friends and people in your community, reminding them how important it is to follow the rules now and do the right thing?
Well, I do when I have a chance to. You know, right now, you know, you can't interact too much with people because nobody wants to, other than on the phone, nobody wants to talk to you. We can't have get together at functions anymore. I had 3-4 events that I was supposed to go to the next couple of months, and they were all canceled, including the memorial or the celebration of Sam Bogosian, dear friend of mine and offensive line coach for 9 years, of who passed away. Mm-hmm. We couldn't give a nice farewell to him. So a lot of things going on right now. You just don't plan on these things happening, but when they do happen, do what's right. Do what's right for everybody, not just for yourself.
Tom Flores joins us. Coach, interesting time with the draft. I can imagine, first off, let's have some fun talking about after you retired as a player and went into coaching, some of the early memories of getting into the war room when you did with Al Davis and Ron Wolf and the staffs along the way with Coach Madden. What were some of your early memories of the draft process leading up to the day?
Well, the very first, my first draft was, only been with the team about a month, I think, in 1972, and we drafted 1972. We drafted Mike Siani, first round. We drafted David Casper.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure who was the second round. Cliff Branch in the fourth round. Dave Dalby in the fourth round. Skip Thomas in the seventh round. I think John Vella was a second-round choice that year. So we drafted all starters. And of those guys, they were great players. That was just a great draft for us, a 1972 draft. And then we drafted another draft shortly after. We drafted Ray Guy. I said, why are we doing that? And, I wasn't that veteran in a draft room. And I said, Rod Wolf said, because he's the best player on the board, the guy can come in and help us right now for the next 15 years. And he did.
Yeah, he turned out
to made the Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, the greatest punter of all time. And, Coach, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about with you. It's amazing how the world has changed now. Free agency, and back then that wasn't the issue. You were drafting players to have for a decade. You would keep your players longer, and you could really turn around a franchise quickly and build on it if you had one or two great drafts back-to-back, which you were a part of with the Raiders.
Yeah, you could. You're right. Knowing that you're going to keep them all until they can't play anymore or you want to move them someplace else. That was the issue in those days. You didn't have to worry about the salary cap. You didn't have to worry about free agency and a lot of stuff that was going on. Or in the banking's early years, so he didn't have to worry about it. So it's a much, much different draft than now. You didn't have a statistician and a finance guy in the room during the draft telling you how much you had to spend.
Tom Flores is our guest. Coach, with one of the up-to-date topics, the Raiders signed Marcus Mariota. I've always thought he's an exceptional athlete. He won the Heisman Trophy. He's been in this league. He's been in the playoffs. He's won playoff games. So he's played at a higher level here. And Coach Gruden and Mayock bring him in here to be the backup, and he even said it's Derek's team. So there's always talk about the quarterback position. Derek Carr played at an MVP level. You were on the call for all those games in 2016 after the injury, and now it seems like Derek is the quarterback going forward. Can you talk about the depth and the addition of Mariota and what it brings to that quarterback room?
I think it's a good sign. I really do. He's a class guy. He's a serious-minded guy. As far as I know, I've never been, in the same room with him. But I've watched him play, and I've watched his development since he was in college. And so it's been fun watching him because he could do so many things. It was painful watching some of the bad times he had at Tennessee. It seems like he could never get, on the right line again or steady or every week on the right line. But I think it's a good sign. I think he and Derek will get along fine. And, there's nothing wrong with having two quality quarterbacks. You got to have them nowadays. And he'd be a good he'll be a backup, or at some point he might be called a play. Hey, see, you're up. And he's got to deliver it. He's got everything the Raiders want, You know, he's got he's a pocket passer, but he can run, and he's got a good arm, and he's got a good presence on the field.
Tom Flores, as we wrap it up, coach, as a player, as an outstanding quarterback as you came into the league, and coaching great quarterbacks, including Jim Plunkett, who won two Super Bowls, can you take me back to what it's like as a head coach when you have to have a decision with the quarterback, when you might have the quarterback that you believe is going to be the starter, but for whatever reason, you got to pull the trigger and bring in the backup? Can you share a story for you on how you were able to do it and how that decision stays with you today?
Well, the biggest decision I had to make, one wasn't a big decision. Was Pastorini broke his leg in 1980, and Jim came in. I was probably going to make a change anyway because Pastorini was struggling with our offense, even though we were not bad as a team. And Jim came in, and he had been with us, you know, three seasons and the first season just watching. And he performed, and with each game he got better. With each game the team got better. And then it became his team, which it has to become. And he took us to the Super Bowl and won. But that was a tough change. But the bigger than that was in 83, we were struggling early in the year. We were still winning, but we were struggling. And Jim was having a trouble. He was just looked like he just couldn't do it anymore. So it was kind of sad. So I had to make a change. So we went Mark Wilson on a big game and went up to Seattle. We lost that game. We fumbled, I don't know, 10 times or something, I think. And then we went to a big game in Dallas, a Sunday night game in Dallas, and we won the game in the last minute or so. And then we were on our way. And then Mark got hurt, broke his shoulder in Kansas City. And I remember Mark coming to the sideline. He said, "Coaches, if you want to win, you got to go with Jim. But I think I broke my shoulder." And I said, "Oh, Christ." And Jim stepped up. And from then on, we became a fine-tuned machine. By the time we got to Super Bowl, we were just rolling.
My wife, Julie, says hi to your wife, Barb. I call her Mrs. Flores, as always. My best to your family, Coach. We miss you. We want to see you. We know when this virus ends and everything becomes normal again, we'll be seeing you often in Vegas, and we can't wait for that.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing with the draft. I guess, there's no way they're going to have a draft as normal, but I was kind of looking forward to coming in town and watching that from there, but I'll get an opportunity. Right now, there's not much you can do about anything. You can't go anywhere. So, I enjoy the conversation. Thank you for the interview because I'm going crazy here.
Hey, when Mike Taylor told me you were coming on, and we talked for a while, and again, you're always welcome. We want to talk to you all the time, and especially for all your contributions off the field and on the field. We're going to have many more of these, Coach. So all the best.
Well,
stay safe.
Yeah, I got 60 years of football in me, 60 years of NFL football, so I've got a lot of stories. I can't remember them all, but they do come up once in a while after I talk about them. It's always fun talking, JT.
Appreciate Tom Flores, and I'm thinking of him heavy. Emotionally thinking of Tom Flores. As we wrap up this hour here on a Friday, you're listening to the JT the Brick Show as we continue giving you what we can do the best every day right here on the Las Vegas Sports Network.